You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey everyone, very excited for today. We're going to delve into an area that I think a lot of us are interested in and have, you know, kind of been walking around the radar looking in at it. So we're going to delve in today. I am with Robert Glaser. He is the founder and managing director of Acceleration Partners and founder and chairman of Brand Cycle. He's the author of the new book, Performance Partnerships, The Checkered Past, Changing Present, and Exciting Future of Affiliate Marketing, which is what we're going to dig into today. Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Tamara.
I'm excited to delve into this because, like I said, I think this is one of those areas that a lot of us look at from afar and we're like, do we get it? Do we not get it? Is it for us? Is it not for us? But oftentimes, I also find that there's a lot of misconception or misunderstanding around what it is. So will you start with the definition? What really is affiliate marketing?
Sure. So in its simplest form, I'll give you the 10,000 foot definition. Affiliate marketing is when a company and a marketing partner, and that's often called an affiliate or a publisher, enter into a commission-based relationship that's pay for performance in nature. The term there is sometimes CPA, cost per action. I think it's easy to understand COD, cash on delivery. So you get paid when you deliver what I said you're going to deliver. So almost every online business over $1 million in sales has an affiliate program. In a lot of ways, it's a framework on how to pay partners more than it is a channel itself, because affiliates represent almost every conceivable form of online marketing activity, from public companies to mommy bloggers to newspaper and magazine websites. You know, really anyone can be an affiliate marketing partner, which is why the word partner or publisher is starting to be used as much as affiliate.
So I have to ask, before we dig into kind of what you do specifically in performance partnerships, why do you think then, given what you said, I'm like, oh my God, that sounds amazing, right? That sounds wonderful. Why wouldn't I do that? Because that connects me with a new audience and a value add for that person's audience, and we're partners. Why then does it have such a, as you kind of said, checkered past, just to allude to your book?
Yeah, so Tamara, I think you hit on the essence, because if I say to anyone, would you rather pay for outcomes or would you rather pay someone based on what they said they might do or inputs, they'd say pay for outcomes. I think the issue came, a lot of it, there's some stuff in the lead generation world and just where people, there was the perception that value was being created, but it wasn't. And partners were more interested in getting paid for kind of trying to intercept and jump in the way of transactions that might have already happened than they were really creating value. So the concept everyone loves, I think the concept was hijacked, I think, by some very smart marketers. A lot of affiliates are just entrepreneurial marketers, and I don't think they were working in partnership with a lot of the brands. They were sort of trying to maximize their own interest, and that's sort of where the whole concept of performance partnerships came about, in terms of like, how do we define the good part of this and what a positive relationship looks like in this space, and eliminate the parts of the industry that have given it kind of a black eye in some cases.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think some of the product companies out there may have ruined it for the rest of us in some way. Not ruined it, but made it harder for the rest of us. But I like what you're saying about let's focus on pay for outcomes, pay for performance versus what you may or may not do. I mean, that's the whole joke, isn't it, about traditional advertising, is the old phrase, I know that 50% of it works, I just don't know which 50% works.
That is the opening quote in my book.
So, perfect. There you go.
It's funny, you're like the third person to reference that. And then yeah. I'm thinking, did they take it from the book, or it's perfect? I mean, I brought that up in the book because I said, look, John Wanamaker, you know, quoted this over 100 years ago when it was not direct marketing. It was brand marketing offline. We had no measurement. We have all this measurement, all these tools these days, and still people are paying so much money for stuff that doesn't work. I mean, look at the display ad fraud that's going on now, and people spending, you know, billions and billions of dollars on ads that were only seen by by robots. Like we're right. we're smarter than this. We right. can, you know, we can. This is really the future of what I see as affiliate marketing performance partnerships is kind of business development partner marketing at scale. Like how do we align incentives, track this, and pay for stuff that works so that it really is, you know, it sounds trite, but that it's win-win.
So if I'm an entrepreneur or a business owner, it doesn't have to be entrepreneur. If I'm a business owner out there, what do you think, what's the reason that I should be in this versus something that I should go, well, that's for other people? Because I think it's kind of a naive question, but I want to hear it articulated of what's the business value to me to make sure this is part of my strategy.
I think if you're in a consumer business, I mean, we're seeing a lot in B2B, and we could talk a little bit more about how it's sort of merging with business development. But if you're in a consumer business that is online, that is looking to get leads or transactions online, and you have more than $1 million in revenue a year, it's going to make a lot of sense for you to get into this, based on different degrees. If you're smaller than that, the time and energy and effort it takes to do it right and make sure you're having a quality program versus some of the stuff earlier, that's actually where a lot of people run into trouble. They just kind of jump in and set it and forget it and don't even look at who their partners are. And that's where they run into trouble. And that's where some of the reputational issues come from. So I think to be able to afford to have an actively managed program, you want to be doing sort of a million or two a year. And you need to have a defined endpoint that you can pay on a sale, a lead, a qualified something. That's the CPA, that cost per action that you can communicate to your partners.
So let's talk a little bit about performance partnerships. How does it differ from, you know, quote unquote, traditional affiliate marketing?
Yeah, so I like to sort of designate performance partnerships like Champagne or Chianti Classico, which is, you know, in anyone can say they have sparkling cider, but you need to be from that specific region. So to have Champagne. So my definition of performance partnerships, you know, affiliate marketing covers a wide range of activities, and performance partnership defines what we consider the high quality aspects and excludes some of the tactics that have been responsible for the poor reputation of affiliate in different circles. So the four elements of a performance partnership are a CPA payout. You know, performance marketing is used in a lot of different broad terms. I think the purists believe there's a difference between measuring input and performance and paying for performance. So you say, look, the payment happens when you get the activity you want. There's transparency in that relationship. There is a partnership or real relationship with the folks you're working with versus it's just a bunch of offers and you don't even know who is working with your company. And then there's real-time tracking and payment. So if you take CPA payout, transparency, partnership, real-time tracking and payment, you know, that includes a lot of traditional affiliate marketing. But what's really interesting is it starts to pull in a lot of partnership marketing, business development, scale, other types of marketing that can be managed in this way. And it would exclude anything where you are throwing offers out there, looking the other way, don't know who you're working with, what they're not working with. That is where affiliate marketing gets into trouble.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that really stood out in what you said to me, which was the transparency aspect of it, because you know, you see the data. There's no hiding behind what may or may not have happened and the possibilities. You know, you've done a lot in this field. You're obviously an expert in it. Will you give us a case study of kind of that best scenario that you've highlighted?
Sure. I'll give you a scenario where I think like a non-traditional element of affiliate marketing, because I think that's helpful for people to think about. So we worked with a company named Tiny Prints for almost a decade, known for all their photo holiday cards, and they sold to Shutterfly a few years ago. So they had all these photographers coming to them and nonprofits around the holiday and kind of going to the biz dev team and saying, hey, we want to partner with you, and or can I send my customers to you? And you know, these were partners that maybe could do a couple $100 a year, $1,000 a year in sales, and just wasn't a good fit for business development. People would, if they worked with them 1 year, they'd make a landing page they couldn't find the next year. There wasn't a scalable way to work with them. And we said, hey, you know, we could take all these people and we could bring them to our affiliate program. We have tracking, and maybe we'll make a landing page for them, but we have all this tracking and payment and measurement and all the stuff that exists. It's just no one thought of those types of partners as affiliates in companies. A lot of affiliates were sort of more seen in the deal and coupon, and that's what a lot of people perceived that it was. And so over a couple year period, we got, you know, 2,000 photographers and another 500,000 schools using the affiliate program. And that's where it scales really well. So this is not, you know, 3,000 people that had to get custom codes and get their own landing page. We were able to train them on how to use the affiliate links and the affiliate tracking. And in aggregate, they became a really valuable source of both revenue and branding for the company. So I think that's a great example where we kind of were able to leverage that business development partnership marketing using an affiliate program that already existed and without a lot of additional work.
So if I hear you right, if you have the right system, you can scale affiliate marketing tremendously in a way that maybe you can't with one-on-one relationships or individual, you know, new business efforts.
Yeah. So I just a little differently. I think you can scale partner and business development marketing using an affiliate framework. Part of an affiliate framework means having an active manager who works with all these partners. And it means having a platform that does a lot of the tracking, payment, and automates all this stuff so that, you know, you go in, the publisher goes in, they pick what links they want, they're automatically tracked, they automatically get reporting and payment, and all that stuff is taken care of. And it handles the contract too. So what stops business development people are saying, look, if I have 1,000 people coming at me for a deal, like I want to do the 100,000 deal, not the $1,000 deals. Wrapping all those folks into an affiliate platform, once they're signed up and running, there's not a lot. I mean, there's stuff that you need to do to keep them engaged. But in terms of, you don't have to mail them checks, they're set up for direct deposit, it makes managing mid and long tail partnerships economical. Once they're up and running, if they want to do something that month and get paid, they can. And that all happens automatically. And if they don't, they don't. In a business development partnership, you have to manage it a lot more actively. People are calling you and saying, where's my check? How did I do? And that's the type of stuff an affiliate program and the underlying technology is really valuable for.
God, that's great. And it's, I mean, the ability to scale is, to you said, you're pulling it all together, which makes it tremendous. It leads me to my next question, which is, how do you find the right partners? How do you know, how do you filter or set criteria for that?
So we build a standard with each brand. So we'd sit down and say, who do you want in your program? Who do you not want in your program? Do you do discounts? Do you not do discounts? But then we build partner personas that sort of take the place of a customer persona. So let's say it's a sneaker company and we work with Adidas. So we would sit down and say, okay, well, here are some personas of good affiliate partners for us or good partners for us. Athletic and team sites, fitness and competition sites, sneakerhead sites. And then we have a variety of tools on how to go out and find these people. But, you know, we recruit them and we pull them into the program and we work on getting them active. You know, one of the things that happens in an affiliate program, or they're increasingly called partner programs, is you don't just set it and forget it. When all those people are in the program, you send them communication as a partner versus, you know, as a customer. And you say, hey, just so you know, again, let's pretend I'm Adidas. There's a new shoe out this month, and we think it's going to be a bestseller. And here's a bunch of information that you can use to put on your website and talk about it. So that sort of starts to merge into the native and influencer marketing, which have always been parts of affiliate. But if you're really managing a program well, you're constantly communicating with these partners and just giving them new ideas. A lot of people are frustrated that their programs are all discount, and that's because their only communication to their partners is about a coupon. So if you want them to talk about content and products and new releases, then you need to inform them about that. And remember, they're not customers, they're partners. So you need to communicate to them as partners and say, here is the type of stuff that you should be talking to your customers about.
Oh, this is great marketing advice. So I want to go a little bit into the future now. What are your predictions for the future of affiliate marketing? And now I really want to call it partner marketing because that just sounds so much better.
It does sound better. And you know, we just had a conference with the heads of several large affiliate programs. And I think from an internal PR standpoint, a lot of them talked about going back and really starting to refer to it as their partner program. And that just had a totally different connotation internally and would just make it better. And there are more people out there licensing white label software to run their own private affiliate programs these days, and they are inherently called partner programs. They're digital partner
programs. And that's what it is at the end of the day. You're partnering with someone. to provide value to their customers and to provide you something in return, and et cetera. So what's the
future? To your point, by the way, partner has it just makes more sense than affiliate. It's clear about what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And then both people are invested too. That's the other thing I'd say, which is important.
And they're trying to optimize good outcomes for both of them, not trying to one do well at the expense of the other, because that's that ongoing relationship part. So I think performance is going to drive up to 30 or 50% of performance-based marketing. It's going to drive up to 30 or 50% of online marketing spend. I just think that you're just not going to pay for stuff that doesn't work. Like, why am I going to hire some agency and pay tons of thousands of dollars and maybe get a 0% chance of success? So my vision is a little more of this that it's going to performance. The demand for performance is going to go up. People are going to be looking for those win-win deals. And I talk a little bit about the Uberization of marketing or marketplaces of marketing. And when you think about what Uber has done or Airbnb as a business and saying, look, we don't have to own cars or we don't have to own the underlying properties. We create a sort of system in which people can interact. Logo tournaments and those sort of things were an early example of this. But this now extends to, hey, look, I can make the marketing of my business a marketplace. So I have a tracking platform, I have rules, I have brand guidelines. But if you are a guru in Snapchat marketing and I don't know how to do that, you can build a business. You can come do that for my company. I don't have to try to be great at everything. I need to be good at a few things. But I can actually create a marketplace where some of the smartest people in the world who love my brand have a platform where they can come do marketing for my brand. And you know, a lot of this influencer marketing that's going on, that's really very distributed marketing. So I think that's going to be the biggest change, which is companies are going to create these platforms that are a little more in-house and a little more in control. And they're going to invite smart marketing people from around the world to come help them, you know, market their business, as long as they're following the rules, adhering to the brand guidelines, and are willing to deliver that on a cost per action basis.
No, what I think is really interesting about what you're saying is, you know, we think of this type of marketing in particular for entrepreneurs, infomercial products, you know, kind of small business. But the conversations I'm hearing from my, you know, consumer goods companies, the large companies, the Fortune 500s of the world, and their marketing agencies, is this real tension of, I want to know what I'm paying for and I want proof of the results or I'm not paying. And that really, what that tells me, kind of with what you're saying, is they're really headed in that direction. It's not just us little guys, but the big guys too are really trying to figure out, hey, wait a minute, there's all this data and all this tracking.
The big guys are driving this. They're saying, the conversation is now, what is your customer acquisition cost? Like, what is a customer worth for you? And if it's $20, if I can, let's say I'm a search firm, I just might change how I work with you. Instead of charging you to, you know, run your paper search campaign, if I'm really that good, I might say, look, you said a customer's worth $20. How about I take over this part of your search and you just give me $20 for every customer that you have? So the existing types of people you're working with may now start to work with a company in a different way. And it's those ones that are really, really good and really, really sure they can get those outcomes that are willing to do that.
Yeah. I want to dig a little more into transparency, which you touched upon and I highlighted, but why is there a growing demand for that?
People have been really burned. I mean, what's gone on in display and mobile display, and where, an agency is paid, let's say like a 25% commission to go buy $1 million of programmatic advertising. They go to a platform or a network to buy that advertising. They're given a 25% kickback. So now we're up to $500,000 to place $1 million. And then it turns out that, 40% of that is fraudulent. And the kickback wasn't disclosed, and no one understood where the ad was placed, and everyone blames everyone else. And the CMO of Procter & Gamble has just sort of stood up on this and he's said enough is enough. And he's leading a pretty big initiative on sort of ethics and transparency. And the problem is that agencies and platforms work who are paid by these brands just don't seem to feel a fiduciary duty to them. They feel like, hey, their job is, hey, I did my job. And if you lost all your money, that's your problem, not my problem. We just never been comfortable with that. And actually, they're doing us a huge favor, because That industry is going through such turmoil right now that it's really helping raise the bar on transparency, I think, across online marketing, where people want to know who they're working with. They want to understand how people are paid. You know, the kickbacks have to stop. Like, you should be paid by one party and not both. You know, if anyone has ever offered us some sort of referral fee or stuff over time, my answer is always, that's great. As long as you want to tell the person that we're getting it. And if they're uncomfortable with that, then clearly, you know, there's a problem there. So I just, you know, we think you need to have the fiduciary interests of one party in a transaction.
You know, I think I'm going to add to what you're saying and say that I think the impact has gone, you know, has trickled far out beyond even digital marketing or marketing in general. I was just interviewing PR firms, and I was getting really frustrated because they kept saying, well, we can't guarantee we'll get you this or that. And you know, but you're going to pay us this incredible retainer to hopefully get mentioned somewhere at some point, but we can't guarantee that. And I kept going back to, you know, what I am steeped in over here of pay for performance, pay for outcome. And I couldn't wrap my head around, and I won't wrap my head around, you know, this idea of I'm going to pay you, but there is zero guarantee, but I'm going to pay a lot upfront. Now, I get there's a lot of work there. I'm not denying that, but it's really impacted how I think about the other relationships that I have in business.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of it is just transparency and communication. I mean, I had a terrible experience with a PR firm 6 or 7 years ago, was that same thing, right? So it takes time. It takes 30, 60, 90 days. But there was just no communication, right? And it's very different. I mean, we coach our own people on the same thing as you're ramping up a program. It's very different. I mean, we work with a couple great firms now, and they communicate, and they over-communicate about what they are doing. And if things work or they don't work, I get it. But at least we're able to see what's going on. I mean, I'm shocked how many people come to me as a performance marketing firm and ask us to buy banner ads or sponsor events. And then, you know, surprise them and say, okay, you want $20,000 for this event, you know, because it's going to be great. I'm like, how about I just pay you $5,000 per customer that we get from, well, I don't want to do that, you know. And then, like, I always find it fun. Like, you know what we do for a living, right? Even people in our industry, you know, there's one person that's pushed me over and over to do this banner ad sponsor stuff. And I was like, look, I would rather pay you a ridiculous amount of money per lead and have our incentives aligned. We actually, you know, we're really struggling to hire people and you know, have had frustration with recruiters. So we just decided to create our own affiliate program. We went out to the world and said, look, if you can get us people in these positions, we will pay you this amount of money. And rather than working with one recruiter, I have a whole world out there sort of knowing that, you know, if they place me a candidate that we keep, that we'll write them a check for $5,000 or $10,000. So we're trying to use the concept ourselves in different places. But it is awkward when people come and ask us to do completely non-performance based marketing stuff. They tell us how well we're going to do, and then when I tell them that, like, we'd be much more interested in aligning incentives, they're like, well, that's not what we do.
That's so funny. You're like, did you read my bio? Look at the company, just out of curiosity. You know, it's funny that you mentioned the events. I had a client who really wanted to do something innovative to get their product to market. And their suggestion coming in was, oh my God, I know. We'll put a booth up at a 5K because, you know, we want to be where our customers are. I was like, okay. And they said, I said, how will you know if it's successful? And their response was, well, we'll pass out 1,000, you know, mini bars. It's a bar thing of food. I thought, well, but how is that successful if half of them are throwing it away, don't notice, and the other half just eat it and then throw it in the trash? Or you don't know.
Well, there's the question. Is that brand marketing or is that acquisition?
Right. Right. But how do you even know? I mean, it's just fascinating. The mindset is fascinating to me, and the struggle between performance versus awareness, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it.
I'll give you one more example that drives me absolutely crazy. It's an article I'm writing, is conferences. So, you go and you do a booth at a conference and it's $10,000 or $20,000. And as soon as you get there, they ask you about signing up for next year. Like, I can imagine, like, again, we start with a client, we send them the extension, right, you know, because you're going to lose your place. And the show finishes and no one says to you, like, how did it do? How was it for you? You get no feedback survey. And look, there's a lot of conferences struggling now because, again, if I'm paying $20,000, the belief is that I have to get $20,000 worth of value. If you don't care if I get $20,000 of value, that's going to become a problem at some point. You have to, this one conference is redesigning the whole thing. They make sure that people go through the exhibit hall. They sold this massive exhibit hall, and then they put all the content on a different floor. And the advertisers were pissed. Said, look, I'm running this booth and no one's here. I see this everywhere. There has to be a win-win in it, in these things, for people to want to continue to work together.
I do a lot of keynoting. So without a doubt, every time I walk through the expo hall, the conversations that I have with the people behind the booths are fascinating about what they do or don't get out of the incredible amount of money that a lot of them spend to be there. And it's fascinating to watch the evolution of that. I'm curious, because you play at this very high level in this area. When clients or potential clients call you, what's their pain, or why are they picking up the phone to call you in those moments?
Yeah, there's usually two primary cases. One, it's a real fast growing brand, and they are looking to do this for the first time and don't understand how, and they've heard about us, or they've sort of, we're a little contrarian in terms of, we're very honest with people. We're like self-deprecating lawyers. We're like, here's what's good about the industry and here's what's bad. And, people tend to like the self-deprecating lawyers. So they'll find our way to us and say, look, we want to do this and we want to do it right. The more common case is a program that's already running. Someone new comes in and they're like, look, we feel like this is kind of a disaster. It seems off brand. We've turned it over to these people or these agencies or platforms or networks, and they're just on maintenance mode. And we need a strategy. We want to think about how to do this better. So we'll come in, review the program, work on a strategy, and put a lot more staffing against it. There was this misperception, I think, through not understanding attribution 5 or 10 years ago, that you just turned on an affiliate program and it performed and you didn't have to do any work. I would love to believe that things like that in life are true, but they never turn out to be. And so what happened is you had these programs that had a lot of these publishers in it and the behaviors that we were talking about earlier. And that's why it looked easy, because they weren't creating a lot of value. So to do a program that has more business development principles, it needs a higher level of staffing. It needs people that, haven't been graduated from college last year and just trained. And so we find folks who are ready to kind of take it to the next level and really rethink about how to expand this into a larger partner program.
I love that you said that, because one of my the phrases that drives me crazy is passive income. It's like, honey, nothing's passive. I still have to work to get those programs up and manage them. Come on now.
Yeah,
it just always makes me laugh.
Anything too good to be true, really always is. It's rarely an exception to that rule.
That's right. So this is a little bit of an offshoot, but in preparation for this, I went on to your blog and was reading some of the content. It was really great. And one thing that really stood out for me was this point you made about, don't give up on your idea or someone else will make it real. Will you talk a little bit about why taking action on your ideas is so important? And I think equally important on that is what the consequences are for not taking action.
Yeah. So, ideas aren't worth much. I think, we all know those people who have had this idea and that idea and this idea, and they just won't act on them, right? So if you don't believe enough in it, I think that if you really have a vision for something and that hasn't changed, then it's about acting on that. It's about just making the decision, going through and saying, look, I'm not going to quit until I see this through. Now, somewhere it's going to get hard in the process. I think I write a lot about on my Friday Forward blog about cases of the myth of the overnight success. And these stories we hear about overnight successes are never, ever true. When you dig into them, you find multiple failures and near-death experiences of almost every brand. In Airbnb, Pinterest, I mean, they have some great stories about the day before they are almost out of business. But I think if along the way you don't believe in your idea anymore, then it's time to move away. But if you believe in that, it's just a matter of finding a way to make it happen. I know when we started this firm and we talked about kind of independent affiliate management, white glove, high level, no market for that existed. I just had a deep belief that that and what we talked about earlier, that this performance marketing as a concept was a really, really important one. It had just been hijacked and derailed, and we were going to be the people to be there that knew how to do it when it came back on track. So, I mean, it's really hard to be successful without being really passionate and consistent about your idea. And if you think it's going to be easy to get it done, it's not. So it's those days when, you know, you're about to throw in the towel, where you have to decide if you're passionate about it as you were in the beginning, or you've lost your passion for it. If you don't believe the idea anymore, then it'll be hard to get everyone else to believe the idea.
So I have to ask you about something you said, because you decided to go into this industry or continue on and put a stake in the ground, as you said, in an industry that really been hijacked and derailed. So there's a lot of learning curve to deal with and myths to deal with when you do that. What made this worthy enough for you to put that stake in the ground and charge forward?
It's a good question. I just really believe that, again, performance was going to drive more of marketing, and then what people saw as performance and what they were accepting, they just wouldn't accept. And I was excited at the notion of big brands getting into the space, but knowing that if they were going to get into it, they were going to need a completely different level of service. It wasn't, as I say in the book, you know, I felt for years that we were the bank selling like 20% responsible kind of down payment mortgages, sitting next to people peddling, hey, you can have this house for no interest. No, and it was hard. You know, we found some of the smart people who got it, but it wasn't the majority. I think we were, you know, we had a pretty consistent vision of what this industry could be, and that, you know, we would help define it.
Well, that's why I ask, because I think you got to have a lot of passion and a lot of vision to start out or to pursue an industry that you know is going to be an uphill battle from the beginning.
Yeah, you know, our company's values tend to align with my core values. So I think a lot of the DNA of my DNA is trying to, and what I do in the company is trying to improve something or make it better. And what I saw was an industry that clearly could be better, and that had all this potential but wasn't working together in any sort of concerted way. And it just seemed like a really big opportunity. I think I always just was someone who was believed in those kind of win-win partnerships. You know, I sort of paid for everything was saying, hey, if I can help you get someone to do this, can you help me to get someone to do that? In some manifestation, I was always running affiliate programs, I think all throughout my life. And I know a lot of people like that who generally try to help other people, and then, you know, they can benefit from that. So when I became aware of the model, I was able to, I saw what it could be and I saw where it was, and I thought that there was a good opportunity to shift it.
That's great. So there's obviously a lot more to dig into. So where can people go to find out more about you or connect with your company?
Sure. Couple places. So the book website is performance-partnerships.com. There's a quick 5-minute diagnostic test called Affiliate Grader on there that'll tell you, give you a score on your program. And there's also, you can download the intro and first chapter of the book. Or you can find me at accelerationpartners.com or on my personal site at robertsglazer.com. And I'm happy to respond to any personalized outreach that is not a sales pitch. I try to get back to anyone that has a thoughtful question or something to ask me.
So if I email you with the, I see that you're a leader like me and I thought we should connect, and I have this product or service that I would like to sell you.
Well, there's that email, right? And then you get the RE version of it that said, hey, did you see the one I sent you last week? And then they say the RE of the RE. And it's like, does this work?
Right. I don't know. So, my response to that is, I saw it and I'm ignoring it. Thank you so much.
Right. Thanks for all the work you put into that.
That's right. So what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
What's one thing that people would be surprised to learn about me?
A hobby, a passion, experience.
Hobby, passion, experience. I'm generally a contrarian, which I think some people would know if they knew me well, but otherwise wouldn't. Hobby, I have a sort of an obsession with airplanes, and I can usually like name the model of a, if you tell me two cities, I can tell you like which carrier it is or which plane it probably is. And it's a party trick that really doesn't make me a lot of money. It's amusing for some people. So I've always been fascinated by airplane, different types of airplane models.
Well, that is something I have not heard yet. So, I mean, I have to travel from San Antonio to, I think I stop in Atlanta to go to Miami. Would you know which one that is?
That's probably Delta.
If
you're going through Atlanta, and then if you're on a narrow body plane, it's probably a 737-8 or one of their old MD-80s. So you'll let me know. You'll let me know.
I would let you know if that was right. Robin, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on and to talk about this area.
Thanks, Tamara. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.